What is up, Atlanta? It's a Thursday with Turtle. That's right. O's already got him up. I'm with you for the full two. And yes, it will be the full two, not the full like three and change that it wound up being last night. Because Corky Kell got off to a roaring start.
A literally, wet start,
yeah,
yes.
Literally as thunder and lightning came down on the field. And do you know what time they wound up finishing last night, O?
So, Day-Day, I asked him today. He said he got home last night after 1 o'clock. So, they wrapped up after midnight. Good.
Wow. That is crazy. Well, today, it is all sunshine and unicorns and rainbows and butterflies outside. And should be getting ready to go right around 8 o'clock should be the kickoff tonight. Excited to bring you more Corky Kell action right here on Sports Radio 92.9. The game. You know, Oren, I felt like such a media guy today. You know, there are some days where, you know, you do this job and, you know, you feel like you're getting tugged in a million different directions. And today was one of those days for me. It felt good. I taped an interview with our good buddy Sigmund Bloom, which you'll hear in 15 minutes. He was nice enough to join me. I said, you know what I said? Oh, I said, I got my fantasy draft coming up in like a week. I don't know what the heck I'm going to do. It's a snake draft, and I'm picking like right in the middle. So it's like the worst of both circumstances. I don't get any of those back-to-back because I finished second in the league last year, so they just screwed me. They put me right in the middle of the snake draft. And I was like, let me get ready. So I tapped in with a couple of my buddies, and I said, you know what? Come on the show tonight. I want to see what both of you have to say, and I want to see where you guys differ or where you guys agree. For instance, I'll tell you, Sigmund, very high on Bijan Robinson. How high? You'll find out in about 15 minutes. Very high on Drake London. You'll find out how high in about 15 minutes. And I also asked him, oh, would he dare take a hope upon hope upon hope?
Don't say it.
Flyer.
Don't say it.
On a guy that if it all works out.
In a contract year.
In a contract year.
Who's healthy for the first time in a couple years.
Could be a top five leader.
At his
in
position.
In his category of
been
tight end.
Been smiling all preseason camp.
Would he dare?
Had a one-handed touchdown catch yesterday.
Yes, he did. Touch Kyle Pitts. You'll find out all those questions and more coming up in
15
minutes.
I'm in a quandary
minutes.
Myself with fantasy football, Chris.
Yeah. How many leagues are you in?
I'm in two.
Okay.
But we've already done the draft order for one. And the first two picks that went, you get to pick your – because we did a contest to see what pick you picked. So the guys who got first and second, they picked – respectively, they picked 12. Oh, no, 5 and 12.
I'm sorry, what?
They picked the – they wanted the fifth pick and they wanted the 12th pick.
Because of some strategy for later rounds?
I have no idea.
Because off the rip, that sounds really dumb.
So I was like, I had a third pick, and I'm like,
all right.
I guess I'll take the first overall pick, but it's been sitting now on me. I've been going back and forth about Jamar and Bijan. I don't know which way to go. I thought when I started this thing, I had one clear direction.
Oof.
Now it's well, yeah, I'm blurred by it.
Well, I will say this. One team lost its offensive coordinator.
They did.
One team's offensive coordinator got better when the starter that is now starting all 17 games was put in.
That happened.
Offensive line, maybe slight edge to Detroit. Yeah, that's tough. I think I'd take our guy, though. I think his usage, Oren. I think people are getting – here's something, and I'll say this. I think everybody needs to just slow down a little bit on the prolification of Michael Penix Jr. The prolificness of Michael Penix Jr. Because – I think we all need to remember something. This offense is predicated on getting 7 and 25 the ball. That's their bread and butter. It's going forwards, not going backwards. So I know a lot of us are hot to trot on Michael Penix Jr., and you absolutely should be. Oren, get it ready. Him and Drake London have been special this season as they continue to work 9 to 5. And we know how special that connection can be. Working 9 to 5. Sing it, Dolly. Come on now. On a Thursday. But, I still think for this team to have the overwhelming majority of success they want to have, Michael Penix Jr. is going to be handing that thing off a lot. If he throws more than, 32, 33 times a game, I don't think that's going to be the game plan. At least a couple of those are going to be dump offs to Bijan Robinson. So, again, I'm all about it. I'm all on the hype train. But I think we need to recognize, just for a second, to Oren's point of taking Bijan number one overall in your fantasy league, he's going to get a lot of touches. Now, I hope he doesn't get 400 touches and you burn him out, but he's going to probably be close to the league lead, I would think. And that's by design. This team is not a team that's going to throw to set up the run. It's the opposite. They're going to run to set up the play action pass. And now they have a quarterback who isn't broken and can actually roll out and make a play with his arm or with his legs. So I'm just saying, like, you know, if you're thinking Michael Penix, speaking of, if you're thinking Michael Penix Jr. is going to be your fantasy quarterback this year, I think he's going to have a very good season, but I don't want him throwing for 40 touchdowns. That's not the game plan. If he throws for 40 touchdowns, that probably means you're behind in a lot more games than you'd want to be. So I'm high on him, and I think he's going to be great, but I think we're forgetting way too much about what the game plan is. The game plan is Bijan's getting the ball at least twice per four downs. Like, that's just what's going to happen. Or a combination of Tyler and Bijan. And if they're rolling, like, you know, Oren, there's like four games a year where Algier just gets going and you just feed him like six straight times and he gets 5 yards a pop. So that's going to happen again a couple of times. So I don't think Penix is going to have like a monster touchdown season. What was it though that you told me was a couple of weeks ago? 18 and a half. No, it's going to be a lot more than that. But I don't think it's going to be 38 and a half. I think it's going to be 24 to 27. And I think that would be a perfect number for him because I think Bijan Robinson's going to have, you know, 14 total touchdowns this year too. And Algier will get 6 or 7. And hopefully Pitts gets, you know, 7 to 10 in a perfect world. So that's just really what we're looking at here. So, yes, we're excited about fantasy, and yes, we're all getting hyped about all the throws in practice and everything that we're seeing, and we absolutely should. But I think we also just need to remember what the game plan is on most Sundays. That is, you are featuring number 7 as the main pinpoint of your offense and your offensive scheme. And you should, because he's, you know, a top 5 offensive skill player in the NFL. And he should be used as such. And there's nothing wrong with that, especially with Penix doing his first full 17. Now, if he goes for 27 touchdowns, throws for, you know, 38 to 4,000 yards and has, you know, 10 or 11 interceptions, then you could use that and say, whoa, what is he going to do next year? And I think you are absolutely right to do that. And then next year we could be talking about, you know, 30 to 35 touchdowns. There's nothing wrong with that. But for right now, let's just remember, Falcons Nation, the plan is to run the ball, and it will be to run the ball. And Michael Penix Jr. will take his shots when he needs to, but that will be set up by Tyler Algier and Bijan Robinson doing their thing. 404-726-0929, 404-726-0929. Coming back, Sigmund Bloom, one of the best fantasy experts in the world, joins me next. Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, Drake London. How does he feel about all the Falcon skill position players? And we whip around the entire NFL as well. Great conversation as fantasy season is right around the corner, and we're getting you set tonight with not one but two all-pro level fantasy guests. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle taking you to Corky Kell starting at 8 o'clock. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. Welcome back into Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Chris Thomas tonight with you until 8 o'clock this evening. Corky Kell classic coverage comes your way. Then we want to head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our special guest, Sigmund Bloom, co-founder of FootballGuys.com. And it is fantasy season, so get out there to FootballGuys.com and check out the website for all of your fantasy needs. We're going to talk some NFL and a little fantasy football as well. Sigmund, let's start here. In Atlanta, a couple of players I'd like to highlight, starting with Bijan Robinson, the potential on the fantasy depth chart and the potential on the field. I think for him, you could say he might be viewed by some as the best option in the league.
Yeah, the number one overall pick. And I think in fantasy football, the feeling around the Falcons is maybe we can finally see how good these players can be, how good this offense can be with Michael Penix. So I do think that Bijan is a top five pick in any scenario, but he is going number one. And if you want him, you can take a stand if you draw one of those early picks, because I think that you're going to see hopefully a weight lifted from this offense now that they have a healthy, mobile, young, aggressive passer.
When it comes to the weapons that he has outside of the running back room, Drake London, we know, is an emerging star in this league. Do you think he has top five, top seven potential?
He definitely does. And we saw, now in hindsight, we can look at where, say, Jalen Polk got drafted and say that Michael Penix, because he was such a willing, able downfield passer, maybe made his draft stock, because he might not even make it to his second year with the Patriots, despite being a second round pick. So absolutely, we can look at London as someone that can fuel Drake, get his value fueled, just be a target who is open even when he's not open. And a true number one receiver who has a quarterback that can unlock what that can look like in fantasy football.
So when it comes to maybe the ultimate boom or bust player in the entire NFL resides in Atlanta, that of course is tight end Kyle Pitts. Do you think he has the potential with Penix at quarterback to finally showcase what he did again in his rookie year?
It's unlikely. I don't want to say impossible, but at the price in fantasy football leagues, I think that he's someone that we're fascinated by, because he was a third round pick as a rookie out of expectations, and he was a 1,000-yard player. He was pretty impressive for a rookie. So he was a third round pick again in fantasy leagues. Then he fell to the sixth round, because now we're starting to see a pattern. Then he falls to the ninth round. Now we're really seeing a pattern. And at this point, we're seeing him in the 13th, 14th, 15th round, and I'm never going to criticize anybody for taking a chance. And honestly, if Kyle Pitts goes out there week one against Tampa and doesn't do anything, then it's actually a good thing that we would just move on and pick up one of the players who did break out in week one. Michael Penix is saying the right things. It sounds like there's a relationship there between the two of them. And again, Penix made some pretty mediocre players look good at Washington.
Going around the league here now, are you a believer that Aaron Rodgers can replicate his old self in Pittsburgh?
I'm a neurotic Steelers fan, Western Pennsylvania born and bred. So I'm sick about it. Honestly, it doesn't feel like the Steelers way to be so desperate and try to make something happen that didn't work for the Jets last year. And I don't expect that you're going to see him have a renaissance, not in a Steelers offense that has been very backwards looking in terms of its concepts and the way they try to win games. They have two rookie, well, not a rookie because Troy Fautanu, he missed all last year, and Broderick Jones just kind of plays like a rookie. But the point being that they have two inexperienced tackles. Caleb Johnson's not looking like he's going to revitalize the running game, third round pick, at least not yet. So I think this is going to be a morose offense, and Aaron Rodgers is not the guy to spruce it up right now.
Talking about an offense that could go one way or another, does Justin Jefferson's stock take a hit to you because of J.J. McCarthy?
Sort of, in an indirect way. Because I think that with J.J. McCarthy, much like Michigan did, they're going to want to run the ball and really set him up in good down and distance situations and create some structure and support around him through the running game. So that's why they signed Jordan Mason, who I think is going to lead them in carries and rushing touchdowns. That's why they signed Ryan Kelly and Wolf Fries from Indianapolis to establish the run again and really provide more balance to this offense, lowering the targets across the board. Now, Justin Jefferson also has this hamstring issue. You know, we'll see about it next week. I don't love that. He has missed, I think, 7 games with a hamstring issue in recent years. So I would say at the very least, you're taking CeeDee Lamb ahead of him. You're taking the three running backs, Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, and Saquon Barkley ahead of him. And even if you take someone like Malik Nabers or Christian McCaffrey ahead of him, I just think, you know, while Jefferson's a magnificent player, things are not set up for him to have a career year.
Are you interested in a bounce back year from CJ Stroud? Or are you staying away?
I'm staying away because we're looking at a Texans team that is still shuffling offensive line combinations, like as we speak. They play the Rams week one. And I think you're looking at an offense that's going to get off to a slow start. Joe Mixon may or may not be able to play week one. So you don't have a credible running game now to help CJ Stroud. So I just think this is one of those situations where they hope to get this going after the offensive line and offense kind of failed on them last year, but it's not going to happen right away.
Any concern in Buffalo about the lack of explosive weapons for Josh Allen?
Not really, because they seemed to do okay last year without anyone that really took the top off of the defense. That being said, you start to see Josh Palmer's banged up, Khalil Shakir's banged up, Curtis Samuel, who did come on at the end of the year last year and probably has the best straight line speed in this group, he's banged up. Keon Coleman is still inconsistent. According to camp reports, Dalton Kincaid is not really popping like a first-round pick. So, yeah, I mean, I think that you're asking Josh Allen to put a lot of this offense on his shoulders, which he has done in the past. Now, all that being said, the fantasy bottom line is I'm taking Lamar Jackson ahead of him, or I'm waiting and taking Jalen Hurts after him. I think the Eagles are going to pass a lot more this year just because it's just the way the averages go. Things aren't going to go as easy for them. But Josh Allen is still, you know, one of the best quarterbacks and best fantasy quarterbacks in the league.
Talking all things NFL and fantasy football with our good buddy Sigmund Blue. Make sure you check out footballguys.com for all of your fantasy needs. Where does Mahomes stack up this year for you? Last year, not a statistical great year for him, but he is still Patrick Mahomes. Do you buy a bounce back season for him with the numbers?
Right. I mean, you want to believe it, but we wanted to believe it last year and it didn't happen. Now we can point to the injuries. Roshi Rice, now they've announced his disciplinary hearing is September 30th. I think you're going to see a 4 to 6 game suspension. Marquise Brown's already banged up. Xavier Worthy can take a step forward in year two. Travis Kelce is slimmed down. Jalen Royals is an interesting name to bring up here, the fourth round rookie, who it sounds like Andy Reid is ready to trust as a rookie. So that tells you how quickly he is taken to things. But at a certain point, you get burned enough that you say, I'll let somebody else be the one who benefits if this Chiefs offense now gets back to its downfield passing ways. Baker Mayfield's going after Patrick Mahomes in fantasy drafts, and Baker Mayfield outscored him last year. And that was with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans banged up. So I'm probably not taking Mahomes in any of my drafts. I won't be surprised, though, if we see a return to form if these receivers stay healthy.
So funny you mentioned Baker Mayfield. That's exactly where I was going next. The numbers last year jumped off the charts. Do you think that's repeatable?
Absolutely it is. And we're not going to see Chris Godwin probably until October, but they drafted Emeka Egbuka, who from all outward indications is going to be ready right away to play a big role, the Godwin role in this offense. I'm a little worried about Tristan Wirfs, the left tackle, being out and how long he'll be out. I do think that might limit downfield passing, but this offense is a well-oiled machine at this point. They bought into Baker. He's bought into his teammates. Jalen McMillan is an ascending player as a second-year number three receiver. So eventually they will get Godwin back, and they will present a lot of problems. Remember, they also have a running game with Bucky Irving that has really come on. So I just think this is still one of the toughest offenses to defend, and the numbers are going to show it.
Speaking of running backs that can carry you, Kyren Williams, I know for me last year almost single-handedly won me a couple of chips. Do you believe the Stafford injury could hamper the running attack and the passing attack in L.A.?
It has to, right? I mean, there's just no way this offense would be as good with Jimmy Garoppolo as it would with Matthew Stafford. And they can tell us everything's okay, but when three different times you say he's going to practice and he doesn't, everything's not okay. They may have him ready to play week one, but how will he look when he starts to take hits? How will he look? Look, we just have to be rational about this and say you do not want your quarterback going into the season not able to practice because of a back issue that is a disc issue. Okay, it's not a pulled muscle in his back or something like that. You can remember the Peyton Manning saga where right up until the season, it was uncertain. And then all of a sudden he was having spinal fusion surgery and like the history of the NFL changed. He was released, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not saying that's going to happen with Matthew Stafford, but we've already seen where the teams will play this close to the vest until the actual moment of truth. Now, that being said, Puka Nacua is starting to fall to the second round of fantasy drafts. Devontae Adams is falling to the late third, early fourth round. Kyren Williams is falling to the late third. Jimmy Garoppolo is still a very good quarterback for a backup quarterback. And Sean McVay is one of the best minds in the league. They are another team with a left tackle question. Eric Jackson with the blood clots that may or may not keep him off the field this year. So that's another thing to consider here. But if fantasy drafters start to let these Rams options fall too far because of the pessimism about Stafford, that's time to pounce because we do have some faith in McVay and Garoppolo to make it a viable offense.
Speaking of injuries, are you taking either Tua, Tyreek, or Waddle, or is that team just too hot to trot right now in terms of wait and see?
I don't want Tyreek Hill on my team. I mean, sometimes fantasy football just comes back to like, it's your team. You can pick the players you want, right? I don't want Tyreek Hill on my team. I mean, I just think he's too much of a malcontent. We saw his top miles per hour speeds drop off last year. He's a player that relies on speed. He still is just not somebody who seems happy to be there. And I don't think you're going to see anything approaching a true bounce back year from him. You might see Jalen Waddle because of that. And look, there was a report from Jeremy Fowler from ESPN this weekend that teams were asking about Hill earlier in the summer. Dolphins said no, they're not trading him, but they're still watching him. Maybe it's wishful thinking, he said, but they're still watching him thinking that he's a player that could be available before the trade deadline. And that could make Jalen Waddle a really interesting player because they traded Jonnu Smith to the Steelers. And that opens up these, what I call struggle targets. You know, the offensive line is under construction and Tua Tagovailoa is going to have to throw quickly a lot. And it's not going to be to Jonnu Smith. It'll be to Devon Achane and to Jalen Waddle. So I'm okay on Waddle. But overall, you know, we saw a joint practice. And a lot of people believe the joint practices are where you really learn about a team, not the camp practices. And we just saw the Lions and Dolphins have a joint practice where the beat writers that were there said, I believe things like either the Lions are a juggernaut or the Dolphins are going to be really bad. Or that was the most lopsided joint practice I've ever seen. So I think the Dolphins could be a team that we see blown up at some point this year and totally rebuilt from scratch in the next year.
Before I let you go, are you a believer in Brock Purdy?
Sure. I mean, for fantasy and for keeping this offense and these tools very much in the scoring column and racking up the stats, I think he deserves a lot of credit because he started playing a little more loose last year, making things happen. And I think if we did see a healthy Brandon Ayuk and Juwan Jennings, we had everybody all hands on deck in this pass offense, he's going to show that he's worth the money. And you know, maybe the reason that the 49ers aren't living up to expectations, I would not put it at his feet. He's still one of the reasons that we think they have a chance to contend.
Sigmund, appreciate the time as always. We'll be checking out footballguys.com and we'll chat soon.
Appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
That was our good buddy there, Sigmund Bloom, footballguys.com, one of the great fantasy websites out there. We'll continue our fantasy football preview about an hour from now with Chad Parsons, another great fantasy expert. We'll see if he agrees with what Sigmund said. Bijan Robinson, number one overall? Okay. Drake London, top 5, 6, 7 receiver? Okay. Dare you take a flyer on Kyle Pitts? Sigmund says, nah, probably not. We'll see what Chad Parsons has to say about an hour from now. But when we get back, Joe Patrick will preview all things Falcons and Titans coming up tomorrow. And as you know, I have the Falcons flyover after the postgame show. Our chance to chat about the games right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, I wish I could promise that Mike Conti, our boss, that, you know, my podcast downloads are going to be the 11 million that this episode of New Heights has gotten so far on YouTube. Unbelievable. If you missed it, Taylor Swift went on the New Heights podcast with the Kelce Boys, launched a new album, and talked about their relationship really openly and extensively. And within 12 hours, they had over 11 million views on YouTube. It's unbelievable. It's crazy. Again, I wish I could promise Mike Conti we were going to get those types of numbers, but I know my numbers are going to be boosted because my next guest is on, Joe Patrick, with me on the WadeFord.com hotline. And check out his podcast, too. Maybe combine, Joe, we can get to that 11 million number for our downloads compared to Joe Patrick on football and Chris Thomas tonight. Does that equal new heights? I don't know, but we'll find out. Joe, we got to talk Falcons and Titans. Obviously, we know what happened yesterday at the joint practice with the skirmish. Michael Penix involved. He sounded mature and focused after practice. What did you see out there? How high was that intensity? And do you feel like that was a good, nice look at Michael Penix Jr. leading the way over those 2 days?
I think so. I mean, it's not just the joint practices in terms of evaluating Michael Penix. It's the entirety of the training camp and what we've seen, and just his willingness to push the ball downfield, and then also the effectiveness in doing so. I think it's worth noting, Chris, that for all this talk, you know, I'm sure Falcons fans were tuning in. You know, they've heard this kind of theme consistently over the course of the training camp, that he's obviously pushing the ball deep, and that kind of fits the MO that he had throughout his college career. But I think that what would be surprising to people is the fact that I've only seen him throw one interception this entire training camp in 11-on-11. There have been, I know, like, there was one that he had against the Titans in 7-on-7s that was kind of very similar to that one that Kyle Pitts kind of tipped up in the air in that Giants game, where it was there was a throw slightly behind Charlie Warner, and that he kind of Warner kind of batted the ball up in the air for a Titans player to take away in the end zone. But other than the one that that Michael Penix threw that was intercepted in a red zone drill, I believe it was sometime early last week in that rainy day, I can't recall him throwing another interception. So I think that that's really important context to put in what we've been talking about with him pushing the ball downfield. And then just on that note, to kind of go back to the whole fiasco that ensued on Wednesday. So what started it all was he threw this touchdown pass to Ray McCloud. And to give you some perspective from my vantage point, Chris, I was standing right in front of Ray, like when he was crossing the goal line. And, you know, it was a big play. So I immediately put my head down to take notes on what happened on the play, and to, you know, potentially send out a tweet. And I look up and I just see a massive humanity. I was kind of triggered to look up because I could hear like people start yelling. And I saw Jesse Bates on the field, and he was supposed to be on the other field for context there, but he had got everybody that was on the sideline of the other field that was working kind of spilled onto the field. And even people such as Terry Fontenot, for example, was trying to break things up. And it's not often you hear about one of these fights that happen in a training camp, especially in a joint practice, where the quarterback is basically at the bottom of a dog pile. That's basically what it sounds like to us. I don't know if anybody got that clear of a view of exactly what was happening with Penix during the whole melee, but man, it's a scary situation from an injury perspective. But I think also when you kind of take a step back and you realize, okay, nobody was hurt, everybody was okay. You know, with the way that we saw the Falcons teammates respond to Penix, the way that they appreciated what he had to say about the whole situation afterwards, with Matthew Bergeron and Ray McCloud, for example, kind of retweeting some of the quotes that were out there on Twitter and kind of saying, like, that's my quarterback, that kind of thing. I think we can just kind of take away that it was a constructive exercise from a team bonding standpoint, and kind of having one of those fiery moments that brings the team together. And hopefully that can, you know, build some permanence as we go into the season here.
Here's the thing. Based off of everything you just said, I just think it's worth noting, and I said this to start the show today, we are all on the Michael Penix Jr. hype train, Joe, myself included, leading the charge. Cannot wait. The bread and butter for the Atlanta Falcons, though, Joe, is to run the ball. They will be set up to throw by Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier, doing what they need to do on first and second down. So I think, you know, just to, you know, put things into a realistic perspective, could Michael Penix Jr. throw 40 touchdowns this year? Sure. But, Joe, do I think that's the game plan for the Falcons? No, I do not.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree because, you know, ultimately, I don't think that Penix is going to be one of those guys who has super high volume passing stats in terms of just like having a bunch of attempts per game, in part because, you know, you don't expect this team to really be trailing games where they're in those kinds of shootouts where they do have to kind of rear back and pass it a bunch of times in a row. And that was kind of echoed by Jeff Ulbrich and Raheem Morris earlier in the offseason, even when those guys are first hired, kind of talking about like, we're building this team as a team that is built to have leads. And that's why they wanted to go out and attract or acquire those pass rushers that they got in the draft, is because they think the teams are going to be passing against them and they can get after them. And then as it pertains to the running backs, you're totally right. And you know, it's these guys, Bijan and Tyler Algier, have completely gone under the radar in this training camp because, you know, there's so much intrigue around Michael Penix and not knowing exactly who he is as a quarterback and what he means for this team and for these pass catchers overall. But you're totally right. I mean, Bijan Robinson, by some metrics, if you look at some of the underlying stuff that you know, the sickos, the analyst sickos like to use, you can argue that Bijan Robinson had one of the best years in terms of running efficiency in NFL history. Now, he did not have the big time runs that limited some of his total numbers, but it's kind of crazy that he did have the numbers that he had, still having had a career long rush of only 38 yards. And when you go back and watch some of the film, Chris, which I've done, I know you've done too, it's amazing to see just the sheer amount of carries that probably should be 0 yard gains, maybe even losses of yards, that he turns into 5 yard pickups, 7 yard pickups, 8 yard pickups. Like, and that's the kind of thing that can just keep the chains moving, keep drives alive, keep the pressure off of a young quarterback like Michael Penix. So I think, you know, these things kind of work hand in hand. And to that point, you know, Zach Robinson has to make sure they work hand in hand by utilizing some play action game in the passing game, which I think he'll be much more willing to do. And I think he's shown so far in training camp, having a quarterback that's able to escape some pressures and he's willing to have his back turn, as he was not clearly with Kirk Cousins coming off that injury last year. So all these things work hand in hand, but I certainly expect those running backs to have a big year. And if I could just add one more point to this, Chris, I was talking to the running backs coach, Michael Petrie, earlier this week. And I don't know if you remember, but this time last year, the conversation around Bijan was like, all right, let's get back to basics a little bit. Let's do more. He talked about kind of wanting to have more of a Christian McCaffrey style of role in the team, where he's just kind of focused on being a runner and utilizing that to the best extent possible to help the team. And I do think that they are now thinking of different ways that they can use Bijan in terms of how they get him utilized in formations and motions and things like that, and how they can get both of these backs on the field at the same time. And if they're able to use Bijan in some different roles where they can get him in motion going out, getting him split out a little bit, and they can still have Tyler Algier in the backfield as a threat to be a ball carrier there, where he himself can also create explosives. In fact, he's been like more of an explosive runner in terms of just the rate in which he creates those explosive runs. I'm talking about like 20 plus yard runs than even Bijan. So, it's really a great tandem that the Falcons have in that backfield, along with an offensive line that can block exactly how they want it. So that's why, I mean, the potential for this offense is as sky high as it is.
What position battles and what guys are you looking out for to stick out on Friday?
Yeah, on Friday, I think it's just more of the same of what we saw in that Lions game. And unfortunately, that game was cut short and for good reason. But, you know, I think that what we didn't get to see there was some players enter the game. We don't know if Braylon Trice, for example, was ever going to enter that game. He did dress and sounded ready to play. I know that he was sounding like before that game that he was going to play. They ultimately held him out, which was surprising because I've seen him rep with, you know, the ones. And it's hard to say like what exactly the ones are, because they do such a heavy rotation on that defensive line, that defensive front. Nate Ollie's been talking about, like, we don't want these guys in for more than four plays in a row because we want to just be throwing bodies at them. And the Tennessee Titans offensive line, and we're talking about how annoying that is when you're just like, you want to kind of get a feel for a guy. And you just like, when they're just continuously throwing different players in there, it gets really frustrating, not only because they have different attributes, but obviously they're, you know, just more energized and ready to go when they've had a rest. And so, it's going to be, I think, like a big edge room in terms of just the amount of players that they probably keep at that position, Braylon Trice being one of them. But I'm interested to see how that goes. Morgan Fox is another one of those guys that we didn't really get to see a lot of. And that's interesting because I thought he was going to be a pretty significant piece of this team's kind of third down pass rush plan as kind of a Grady Jarrett light, so to speak, not in terms of what he is overall to the defense, but just in terms of the way that he attacks offensive linemen in those pass rushing situations as being a bit of a gap shooter and somebody who has a track record. So it was interesting that he only came into that game very late on, only got, I think, a couple reps before the game ended up being cut short. So that was an interesting one. And then the other thing, Chris, is that it's gone a little bit under the radar because Younghoe Koo's kind of, I think, locked down the fact that he's going to be the team starting kicker in his training camp kick so far, but he is going to be taking the kicks in this game. And you never know if the dynamic could change if he misses a couple. So I think it will be really important for Falcons fans and the coaching staff to see him go out there and nail whatever kicks they give him.
All right. So a couple more things here before I cut you loose. Crystal ball prediction. Does Kirk play in either of these last two games?
No, I don't think he will. That question hasn't left open, so I could technically be wrong, but I do feel pretty strong, confident in this that he's not going to play. Raheem Morris kind of said, like, you know, we'll leave it up to him. We'll have a conversation about it. And he said that last year he wanted to get some reps in preseason, and I think it's a different dynamic this year for him because he's not the starting quarterback. So, you know, like there's not the pressure on him to go into that week one game and be ready to perform. So I don't think that he feels the same necessity to get in there. And I got to say, Chris, it's like, listen, I take the point in good faith that you know, you want to show that he's healthy. The Falcons might have an interest in showing that he's healthy, but I don't know what him getting back there and throwing a few footballs for a series or two is really going to show teams that they didn't already know about Kirk Cousins. I just don't know what exactly he can prove other than for him to go out there and like run some play action. But I don't think that they would do that in this instance with the backup offensive line for him, which we saw was pretty shaky in that Lions game. So I don't think he's going to play for that reason being that offensive line.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I just think owners, GMs, coaches, as we know in the NFL, are obsessive compulsive, to say the least. And maybe just the sheer fact of literally watching him just throw a few plays, maybe, I don't know how, you know, it's an interesting thing. I don't know. Maybe you know the answer to this. I don't know how much film of other teams, like, do they get? Like, how much have other coaches, GMs, owners have been able to see of Kirk in Flowery Branch the last couple of weeks? I don't know the answer to that.
It's a great point. I believe the Falcons can basically control their film, and I do wonder if they would be willing to share some of the film they have of Kirk Cousins if a team came in and was interested in that. So, but it's a great question.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, and I'll be fascinated to see what happens. All right, Joe, appreciate it. As always, we'll check in after the game on Monday to recap everything that went down.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Chris. Appreciate it.
All right. That is Joe Patrick there. Make sure you check out Joe Patrick on football. When we get back, we'll let you hear from Caden Ellis and Chris Blair on stuff that went down yesterday. Then we'll also let you hear from Charlie Warner as he joined the morning shift. So the Falcons talk continues as we hit the 7 o'clock hour. It is Chris Thomas tonight with you till 8 o'clock, leading into Corky Kell Classic coverage. Welcome into the second and final hour of a shorty show. Chris Thomas tonight with you till 8 o'clock. We got Corky Kell Classic coverage coming your way then, and it will be dry tonight. I felt so bad for those kids, man. I was watching on TV. I was like, I know this game's important, but is it that important? Like, they couldn't snap the damn ball for half the time. Oh, my goodness, that was crazy. I'll never forget, Oren. Little story time before we let you hear this interview with Charlie Warner. I'll never forget this. This just sparked a memory for me. It was my freshman year of football. And what they wanted you to do was, after the freshman season was over, the varsity season went on for a couple extra weeks, with the last game taking place on Thanksgiving Day morning. I'll never forget it. So apparently, like, all the really good players on the freshman team, of which I was not one. I was a starter, but I wasn't great. Like the quarterback, basically all like the hotshot, you know, guys that were going to be varsity next year. They all found out that the coach was getting fired. And they were like, we're not working a couple extra weeks for this dude who's not going to have a job next year anymore. So they all bailed. So it was like me and all of like the backup players, like, you know, the guys that were like I was a starting defensive tackle, but I wasn't very good. So it was like all of us, we were practicing and holding the bags for the varsity. Thanksgiving morning comes after weeks of practicing with the varsity. Now, mind you, the coach wasn't good, but he believed in strength and conditioning. And we would run gassers at the end of every practice, almost the length of the football field. And we were our little freshman legs trying to keep up with the juniors and seniors. It was not a pretty sight. So the game finally comes. Oren, when I tell you on that Thanksgiving morning of 2008, it rained like only I've ever seen here in Georgia in the middle of summer, honestly. Puddles on the field that were 4 and 5 inches thick. Like our socks, our shoes completely ruined, had to be thrown out after the game. Jerseys, it was so, and mind you, this was Thanksgiving morning. So it was cold rain that was coming down. It wasn't even refreshing. The icicle water that was coming down on me. And Oren, I wasn't playing a snap. I wasn't getting in there. I was standing on the sidelines the entire time.
Chilling, literally.
I was a freshman. I wasn't even allowed to play. I had to sit there. And there was no amount of clothing or Under Armour, heat gear, whatever you want to call it, that was keeping my patoot warm. It was absolutely awful. That just reminded me of that, because that's what those kids last night in the Corky Kell were dealing with. It was crazy. All right, let's let you hear from Charlie Warner, tight end for the Atlanta Falcons. He stopped by with the morning shift right here on Sports Radio 92.9 on the Game.
Yeah, they definitely. Zach's very creative in how he uses me, and it's a lot of fun to me. You know, it kind of feels like a mix of tight end. You're doing a lot of moving fullback stuff. You know, just I enjoy it, and I feel like it gives our offense a lot of creativity in the run game.
Let's talk about the process for you to come here. Obviously, you're a Georgia guy, but you know, I don't know how that goes. Does your agent contact you and say, hey, Atlanta's interested? Obviously, Zach, Raheem, a couple of guys that you're familiar with are headed over here. Had to have been a decently exciting phone call to know that, you know, some interest down here from back from Atlanta.
Yeah, I was, you know, very blessed to have a healthy, solid 4 years in the league at the 49ers. And the hitting free agency was a blessing to have, have options to decide. And, when the Falcons finally reached out to my agent, was very fortunate to receive a good offer. See you, buddy. I was excited to come back to the team I grew up cheering for. So, yeah. And, yeah, like you said, growing up in Georgia, being a Bulldogs fan, a Falcons fan, definitely an honor and a privilege to come back here.
Well, speaking of that, since you played for UGA, when's the last time you got out to Athens, checked in with the team, checked in with Kirby Smart?
Yeah, so we used to live in Athens in the offseason when I was playing for the 49ers. But since we signed here, I live in Flower Branch and don't go over there as much. But, I haven't been to a game since I played and I didn't go to a practice this year. I went to some last year. We were still living in Athens last year in the offseason. It's been a while. I need to go back and catch up with everybody. And I got two kids now, so it's getting a little harder. Yeah, I got an infant and a three-year-old. So
a little bit difficult.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, I know that they did a special on you on thefalcons.com, right, the YouTube channel. And Kirby Smart sat down for like 40 minutes to talk about you. I mean, I don't think Kirby Smart does that for a lot of people. So you clearly had a really good relationship with Coach Smart.
Yeah, but me and Kirby, I mean, gosh, we both grew together a lot, especially me seeing him as his first year as a head coach and me being the young kid, unconfident kid from a small town. We both kind of grew together, and I feel like especially as I got older, I tried to give him more feedback and just communicate with him towards my junior, senior year, and then kind of just flourish from there a little bit. But, yeah, Kirby definitely, he honored me more than he should have. We definitely grew a lot in those early years of him being head coach.
Are you still in touch with Coach Smart? Still kind of touch base with him here and there?
I'll shoot him a text every now and then. Man, he's so busy. We're so busy, you know. I definitely was more in touch, like I was saying, when I lived in Athens. But it's getting a little harder now. But I need to reach out to him.
Joined by Charlie Warner here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 929. And Henry, I'm sorry. And Henry, good-looking boy right there. Man, looks like he might be a fullback or an H-back in his day.
He's got linebacker.
Right. He's got linebacker. Yeah, I say that. But my boy is –
His mom's 5'5".
My boy is 5, and I'm like, dude, you don't stand a chance of ever playing a skill position, buddy. He's as thick as it comes. All right, so the Titans are in town. Let's talk a little bit about the chippiness out there at practice today. I think that's what everybody's going to want to talk about coming off this. And you kind of know it builds. I mean, I think we did this five or six years in a row where you have two-day crossovers, right? So the first day, it's like a little bit chippy. The secondary, everybody's watch film. Everybody's position coach is talking trash. Come out here, it gets a little chippy. What was it like inside of some of those scrums today? Is everybody's trying to get separated and keep everybody healthy, but obviously you know, a lot of attitude on the line.
I've never gone to a joint practice where there's not a fight, so I'll say that there's always a fight, especially day two. Usually the traveling team, I mean, sometimes the home team's tired, you know, you get tired, you fall on somebody, whatever, you just want to get out of practice. So that's usually what happens, and it happened today, I'd say. I ain't afraid to say it. But, yeah, it definitely got bad out there, that one big scrum, especially when you see Mike go down. And that's
what's
not acceptable.
Hey, this Luke, guy's awesome, man. He's a great kid.
Good to see you, Luke. Good to see you. Yeah, when I see a quarterback go down, I'm getting involved. So,
first of all, we keep hearing people say this about you, so I'm glad you're finally you're blue collar like our show. We're a little bit of a blue collar group as well. And look, let's just follow that up a little bit. Have you ever had a quarterback that you've played with that's as chirpy like that? I mean, Penix was letting everybody know on that deep ball to Ray that they made a big connection.
Yeah, no, Mike's dripping with confidence, you know, which I like to see, especially from a young kid, you know, going into year two, only four or five starts under his belt. Yeah, we definitely feed off Mike, and he's letting it rip out there. I think he had a really good day yesterday. Had to watch the tape on today, but yeah, I think he had a good day again today.
Charlie, you were drafted by the 49ers, and you spent what, 3 or 4 years there with Kyle Shanahan. The Shanahan system, what Zach's running is similar to what McVay ran. All these guys were coaches together at some point. How similar is your role that was at the Niners here with the Falcons so far?
Yeah, it's definitely a little similar. It's, you know, kind of the, like you said, a branch of the Shanahan tree, with some similarities and also with the differences. And I feel like we're kind of talking about earlier, it's kind of a Swiss Army knife role of kind of mixing the traditional fullback with all the motions with traditional tight end. It's just finding the marriage of all that and how they use me with the offense, with the run game, and even with the pass game. So, yeah, it's got its differences and similarities, but it's fun to figure it out and do it with them.
When that light, you know, you're going to shorten somebody's neck every once in a while, but you're also going to make a big catch, maybe a first down or something. Which one has a little bit of sweeter feeling to it? Is it the shorten the neck of a guy or making a big catch for the team?
When it's third and two and you're in motion and you widen the six technique out and Tyler runs it right behind you for a touchdown, there ain't no better feeling.
We are joined by Charlie Warner live live from Falcons training camp on the morning shift. Who are you rooming with out here?
In our little dorm, it's Nico, I can never say his last name, Kalinic, I think, and then Felipe Franks and KP.
Are you guys all business in there? Are you playing video games, listening to music? What's the vibe?
In the beginning, the first week and a half, we would all hang out until about 10. We had some really good, interesting conversations. And then after that first week and a half, we got so tired. I started getting in bed by 8:30 sometimes. And we live so close now that sometimes I'm trying to get home to put my kids to bed. And then I'll run back real fast for curfew. But we had some energy there in the first bit. And then we've been petering off a little bit. So
a little bit tired now.
I love it, man. We'll go ahead and let you go. You can get back to Henry over there. But appreciate your time. Yeah. That's Charlie and Henry Warner here on the morning shift. Thanks so much.
Awesome stuff there from Charlie. He'll be a big part of the offense doing the dirty work in the trenches, hopefully, while KP is out there making them catches. Coming up next, let's continue our fantasy football bonus coverage here today on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I know my draft's coming up soon, and I'm not sure what to do. I'm picking in the middle of the first round. That's what I get for finishing in second place last year. We chatted with Sigmund Bloom earlier. Now we'll get a different perspective. Chad Parsons, under the helmet fantasy, is going to join me next. What does he think about Bijan Robinson? Does he agree with Sigmund, number one overall player? Interesting stuff. Don't go anywhere. Chris Thomas with you till the top of the hour. My fantasy football draft is just a couple of days away. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm picking in right slab in the middle of the first round in a snake draft. And boy, is that going to be a tough call. Do I go running back, wide receiver? Who's still going to be there? Ugh, decisions, decisions. So bringing on a couple of the best in the biz tonight. Fantasy blowout special here on Chris Thomas Tonight, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in Chad Parsons, host of the Under the Helmet Fantasy Podcast. Chad, let's start here in our own backyard in Atlanta. Is Bijan Robinson the best available player this year?
I think so. Think about the upside that's being unlocked on this offense with Michael Penix, a more functional passing game. And you look at where is the ball going to go. If Kyle Pitts is not healthy, he hasn't been in quite some time. So it's a leap of faith to say he will this year. And Bijan Robinson, such a workhorse and such a two-way player that you figure if you're not going Saquon Barkley, Bijan Robinson is definitely the way to go.
Would you even consider, you know, at the back end of the draft, taking a flyer on the potential of a guy like Kyle Pitts?
Oh, absolutely. I think the risk reward is there. At tight end, it's all about the ceiling. It's all about the highest potential of the player. If you get tight end 7, 8, 9 as your result, it doesn't really matter much. You need a McBride season, a Brock Bowers season, a George Kittle season from last year. That's what you're shooting for, and we saw that from a rookie season, Kyle Pitts. And all reports are things are going well for him, so he has the best chance over the last 2 or 3 years to get back to that level.
All right, let's whip around the league here. How much of a believer are you in Caleb Williams? Do you think he can lead some of those targeted weapons that they have in Chicago to big seasons?
Pretty concerning. I am not a big fan of Caleb Williams when he was coming out. I didn't think he was the best quarterback or even one of the top two guys of that draft class. Jaden Daniels and Drake May were higher for me. And one of my bold calls this year is he's not going to be a 4,000-yard passer and break the curse there for the Bears. So the Ben Johnson love. He's been struggling generally in camp, and I need to believe it to see it, because Jared Goff is the exact opposite type of quarterback. Get the ball out, be part of the system. I always say be John Stockton to the Carl Malone, distribute the ball on time into the weapons. Caleb Williams kind of wants to be a star. He kind of wants to extend the plays, create some of those circus moments, and that is not what this offense is designed to be, and there's weapons everywhere, but I still think everyone's overrating the Bears.
Sticking in that division, Jordan Love obviously got some help in the first round. What do you think about his chances at quarterback and the weapons in Green Bay?
Yeah, I love Jordan Love. I think that last year, even when he played, he was hampered by injury. And I think that goes lost when a lot of players, they're playing and they're way less than 100%. And it wasn't so much Jordan Love scrambling. It was him extending plays because he loves to go for the deep ball. Now you have a 4-3 wide receiver in the first round. You've got Jordan Love more mobile than before. They were very run heavy last year. So I think you tweak that dial a little bit more towards the pass. You have Jordan Love being able to extend plays and throw deep balls a lot more often. And all of a sudden, you know, he's one of my favorites because he was one of the, not in fantasy, the NFL top quarterbacks to close 2023. And obviously people are down on him now because he had a down year here in 2024, mostly due to A, missed games, and B, being limited when he was playing.
I throw my hands up. I'm the first to admit I was dead wrong on Bo Nix. I thought he was the typical really good college quarterback that just didn't have what it takes to be good in the NFL. Do you buy him from a fantasy perspective this season?
I think the one thing I'm skeptical of is the market has come up to where you're having to draft him in the top 10 quarterbacks. And I think in a draft, you know, once the first 5, 6, 7 go off the board, I think you get to Burrow, you get to Mahomes, you know, they're probably going to be quarterback 5, 6, 7, somewhere in that range. I think you can wait. So the biggest part for me is price. Like, you can wait, get Brock Purdy, wait, get Dak Prescott, Drake May, Jordan Love. I mean, you have so many options when instead of going with quarterback 9 or 10, where, again, most of your league mates already have a guy, I just prefer by that moment in your draft to wait a few more rounds and get other players filling out your lineup. So it's mostly cost. It's not that I'm concerned. Dual threat, you got Sean Payton pulling the puppet strings there and optimizing Bo Nix. So I love the rushing profile. I love that the weapons are getting slightly better with Evan Engram joining the fray this year.
Would you take, if you had the opportunity, Lamar or Josh Allen?
I think you got to go Lamar Jackson. I mean, there was so much that went wrong last year, and you're talking about a guy that had 40-plus touchdowns and 4 interceptions. I thought he was the easy MVP. He didn't get it. I think both guys have kind of a chip on their shoulder for varying reasons, but Lamar Jackson, you know, is still one of those frightening players. It's close, and I think it's funny because, you know, expert leagues, quote unquote, you know, a lot of times these quarterbacks will last around 3-4 because everyone plays quarterback chicken. I think in your traditional leagues, these guys will be gone probably in the first two and a half rounds. And that's more appropriate with the values they add rushing and receiving, rushing and passing.
Either, neither, or both, Kelce and Mahomes have bounced back seasons.
Oh, I'm going to go with both. Big on Mahomes. I think the big plays are going to be back. Actually, news just came out today that we have Rashee Rice probably going to be in the lineup for you and for fantasy drafters in the first 3-4 weeks. We'll see if that suspension comes, but they're not going to get legal proceedings until the end of September here. So that's a real twist to the timetable. We're going to get full on Mahomes, Rice, Kelce, Worthy, all those great weapons to start the season. So I think people are sleeping on Kelce as well.
Talking with Chad Parsons, make sure you check out Under the Helmet for all of your fantasy football needs. Are you into any setback here for Justin Jefferson or Jordan Addison, who I know is facing the suspension, but with J.J. McCarthy at the helm?
I think a little bit. You know, I think this is a team where they brought in Jordan Mason. They kind of told you what they think, which is we need two backs. Part of that's an Aaron Jones thing. They don't want to make him a workhorse, but they have two functional backs, and just they have a young quarterback where we can say that Sam Darnold was new, but he's been an NFL veteran for quite some time, and they were really able to unleash it. I think it's going to be a lot more play action. I just don't think it's going to be as pass heavy. And so, yeah, I think Jefferson, when you're picking hairs between, say, Ja'Marr Chase, I even like CeeDee Lamb a little bit more this year. Malik Nabers got so much volume last year. There is a real challenge at the top of the wide receiver board. So I think you have to be careful there. And with Addison, he's the number two guy on his team. I always say be skeptical of that number two role outside of the very apex of passing games in the NFL. And you're dealing with a guy that's going to be suspended to start the year. So you put those things together, and Addison, I'm not going to say do not draft, but you got to really get a good deal on him.
What are we doing with Jalen Hurts?
Jalen Hurts, what's funny is all the talk is about Tanner McKee with his great preseason game this past week. But with Jalen Hurts, hey, if the tush push is there, A.J. Brown's there, Devonta Smith is there, the weapons are there, life is good. And I would just say this, that Saquon Barkley, I'm skeptical because he had almost 500 touches last year. He played through early February. That is usually a harbinger of not good things, either an injury, just not having fresh legs and all that the next year for someone like Saquon Barkley. So I would be even more bullish on Jalen Hurts if Barkley were to miss time, because even more focus on Jalen Hurts in the run game, even more possible, you know, inside the 5-yard line rushing attempts and a few more passing touchdowns. So yeah, Hurts there, QB 4 or 5 off the board. I think that's a no brainer if you miss on Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen.
Who do you trust more if you need a second quarterback, Geno Smith or Sam Darnold in their new homes?
Definitely Geno Smith. One of my bold calls for this year is Geno Smith, 30-plus passing touchdowns. I think with Brock Bowers, Jacoby Myers is underrated, and Deontay Thornton, he's going to get a lot of love here. Guy that's a 4-3 guy, fourth-rounder, but it looks like he's going to be a starter with that team. And Geno Smith has always been underrated. He already has a 30-plus touchdown season. He's going super cheap. And when you talk about guys like Stafford or Tua Tagovailoa, even Michael Penix, but basically non-mobile quarterbacks in the quarterback 20-plus range of cost, Geno Smith is my favorite.
Are you a believer in the Kyler Murray to Maserati Marv connection in year two?
Man, Kyler Murray scares me. I'll just be honest. Like Marvin Harrison Jr., he had a lot of opportunities last year, and there were overthrows, missed times, all of that. So I don't question the Harrison part of this. I will say the fantasy equation for both Trey McBride and Marvin Harrison Jr., it's complicated because it means the quarterback needs to be really good, and I'm just skeptical of Kyler Murray. So he might torpedo the whole thing, and that's where my pause button comes in.
Do you have any bust fear potential for Jaden Daniels in year two?
Not so much. I mean, I think he did a lot with a little last year. He's super mobile. He's one of the few guys that can challenge the absolute top of the position for rushing production, and that really pays a lot of bills. They didn't really do a lot in the, you know, to upgrade on Brian Robinson or anything. So I think that Jaden Daniels, while I would rather go with a profile that's done it more like a Hurts or an Allen or a Jackson, even Mahomes, you can only drop him so far. So I think, like, even if he is a quote-unquote disappointment, he's still going to finish in the top 8 to 10 of the position due to the rushing.
A guy who was a fantasy darling a couple of years ago but keeps getting injured is Breece Hall in New York. With Justin Fields there, you figure they're going to be running a lot. Could he be worth looking at a bounce-back year for?
Good news is you don't have to draft him as your running back one. I think that he goes after the top 10 to 12 guys. So the cost is fine. He's got the receiving upside. The one concerning thing I'll mention, and this will be something to note why the preseason actually matters a little bit, is they played Braylon Allen and Isaiah Davis, both impressive running backs last year as rookies. They played them both a decent amount with the first team. So if Breece Hall isn't a workhorse back, if he isn't a high market share of the backfield guy, that's really concerning because I like guys in a similar range, like James Cook just got a new contract. You got Kenneth Walker, who I really like, Alvin Kamara, James Conner. So there's a bunch of options in that range. And so part of me is just, I don't think you have to take the risk of Breece Hall unless he falls to running back 15 to 20.
When you look at the state of the Pittsburgh Steelers, do you think DK Metcalf is enough to make Aaron Rodgers a viable offense to choose from in fantasy?
It's tough. It's tough. The one big call I have with the Steelers is that Jaylen Warren is going to be the play. I think about Aaron Rodgers. I think, who's he going to trust? And I don't think it's going to be a rookie Caleb Johnson in the backfield. And so I think Jaylen Warren is going far too cheap among the running backs. It's outside the top 30, which basically means they don't even really view him as a starting running back in fantasy terms, which I think is a mistake. But yeah, DK Metcalf, I mean, he's going to finish in the top 24 almost by attrition. They don't really have much in wide receiver two, wide receiver three. So they have two or three tight ends. But yeah, DK Metcalf, I think, is going to enjoy some of the best, you know, back shoulder throws and deep targets that he's had in quite some time.
A guy we're keeping our eye on here in Atlanta, a hometown kid, played for UGA, Ladd McConkey with the Chargers. He came in last season and torched the Falcons. Is he primed for a breakout year?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people say he broke out last year. I think there's even more upside, you know, and that you look at what he was able to do. Mostly it's the durability part because he was absolutely peppered. He was basically a better case of Khalil Shakir there in Buffalo, similar type player, but you saw much more upside from McConkey. So those guys that produce at that level with that efficiency on a per-route basis as rookies, and especially impressive, is it's not like he was a top 5 or 10 pick in the draft. So he did this when the NFL generally said, you're not really worth a first-round pick, goes early second, and those guys typically, again, are lock and load. Like, the floor is so high, and top five is on the table, you know, for those types of profiles entering year two.
Does the quarterback situation in Indy sink the value of Jonathan Taylor?
I'm really concerned, and the main part is I just don't think he's going to get a lot of receiving game work. Unfortunately, they have Tyler Goodson, who they use a good amount in that capacity, and so the ancillary running back, they take Jonathan Taylor off the field, and then you have two quarterbacks and a system that is not generally focused on running backs in the passing game. Anthony Richardson has actually been one of the lowest in terms of running back percent targets, you know, in terms of their overall passing volume. So very concerning there. And we just, you know, this could be a dead man walking coach situation. This could be a team, you know, drawing dead essentially by midseason. So it's pretty concerning from a floor standpoint, even though Taylor's one of my favorite running backs to watch. It's just not a great situation.
Before I let you go, would you touch anybody on Miami's offense?
I think you have to. I think you have to touch Tyreek Hill with the price he's going at. I mean, again, you can get him as your wide receiver too. And I think that kind of upside, the one risk here, and it might not be a risk, and that actually might end up being good news, is Miami might be in the tank by midseason. And if things go wrong and we see tea leaves that it could be going that way, is he someone that he should be on the block? He should be going to a contender. You say, does he walk into a wide receiver one situation, or is it ambiguous? So that's my one concern, if Miami is actually a poor team and they end up selling off pieces. But I think both Jaylen Waddle outside the top 30, and then you've got Tyreek Hill, you can probably get him as your wide receiver too. I think they're both appropriately priced. And Devon Achane, I would just mention, the guy's a workhorse despite being subsized. He sees so many targets. Miami doesn't even have to be good, and we saw that last year, for him to be an elite fantasy option, which he's actually, I think you were talking about the mid-first or later first draft position. He's a really good one if you end up missing out and you don't want to take a shot, say, on Christian McCaffrey or someone like that. Devon Achane, and maybe even wrapping around to round two, is one of my favorite running back picks.
Chad, great stuff. Appreciate it. We'll check you out under the helmet, and we'll be listening. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Go Falcons.
All right. That is Chad Parsons there. Hit him up at Chad Parsons NFL. A little Go Falcons there at the end. That's a way to butter me up if you want to come on and be a recurring guest on the show. All right, Chad. Good job. All right. 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. Oren, I put up a question on Twitter. Got a lot of feedback. I'll tell you what it is next, and we'll respond. I'll read through some of these comments as we wrap up shop here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Chris Thomas tonight. I put out a tweet earlier today. I was at home doing some prep for the show, and it's simple. It's a simple question, and I put it out there on Twitter, and I got a lot of responses. You can go find the question and contribute at C Thomas Radio, or you can give I got a couple of minutes here. You can call the show, 404-726-0929. Not playing Michael Penix Jr. in the preseason would be a mistake by the Falcons. Agree or disagree? 404-726-0929. Not playing Michael Penix Jr. in the preseason would be a mistake by the Falcons. Agree or disagree? I'll take a couple calls at 404-726-0929. Also going to read some of your responses here. Our buddy Garrett Chapman chimes in. He says he disagrees. Our buddy Kareem says, even if they did play him, he wouldn't get more than three possessions. That's not going to make a difference in his development. Kareem, I kind of disagree. I'm not going to lie, man. Live bullets at this stage of his career are valuable. He's only had three starts in the NFL, y'all. Like, I think we keep blowing past that fact, and because he looks so good and we think he's going to be so good, he's only started three games. That's not a lot. That's not a representative sample size to know what's going on fully. Again, not playing Michael Penix Jr. in the preseason would be a mistake by the Falcons. Do you agree or disagree? 404-726-0929. DC chimes in. He says, we can just lose a few regular season games to get the offense in sync. Typical. That's funny because that's sly right there from DC. But he says essentially what happened last year, which was the offense wasn't ready. Kirk wasn't 100%. We didn't know that at the time. And you came out and you lost to the Steelers, who threw almost zero passes with Justin Fields and beat you on six Chris Boswell field goals. I mean, that's what we're looking at here. So we've seen this happen before where you don't get any run. The two joint practices are really the only thing you have to go off of. And the work, obviously, good on good in training camp. But against other competition with guys trying to take your block off, you essentially just finished up. The preseason for Michael Penix Jr. is essentially over. Is that a big deal? Do you care? Is that something that needs to be addressed by Ron and his staff? Do they have the wrong approach? Not playing Michael Penix Jr. in the preseason would be a mistake by the Falcons. Agree or disagree? 404-726-0929. I mean, a little run. Just a little bit. Tell me it doesn't make a difference to face live bullets. I absolutely do. Let's start with Ronnie on the line. Ronnie, what do you think? Agree or disagree?
I definitely think it's a mistake. They should have learned from Kirk Cousins last year with the brand new everything, new coach, new quarterback, new system, new players. Just need to gel and hear the call in a live game action, relay the call, line up, see everything in live action. Even if it is two or three series, you just can't replace that and live games that count is not where you should start learning where that how that flows. It's just the flow of the game.
Yeah,
that you could get into with the preseason.
Ronnie, that is a great call to start it off. I agree with every single thing you just said. You cannot replicate it. Again, even if it's just for a couple of series, just to get that feeling back out there of, he said, things we don't even think about, right? Getting the calls in from the sideline. Oh, you guys remember that last year, Orin? Getting the calls in from the sideline was a problem last year. Timeouts, that was a problem. So much so that Arthur Blank sent a missive out this offseason, said, yo, clean that up, okay? Come on now. 404-726-0929. Let's see what David thinks. David, do you agree or disagree? Not playing Michael Penix Jr. in the preseason would be a mistake.
I think you got to play him some, as what the previous caller mentioned. And here's something completely counterintuitive, but statistically valid. The league office released some information not too long ago. Teams that play their starters in the preseason have a reduced frequency of injuries in the first four or five regular season games. That, to me, that makes no sense, but the numbers are the numbers. There's no duplicating live football, the crowd, the environment, the preparation, all that. You need to get some of that out of the way before you have to go in, because if the other team's done it and you haven't, you're playing cold from a jump start and they're not, and you only have a handful of possessions every game, and if you're going to throw a few of those away just to get warmed up, you're at a disadvantage.
David, you know why that's a really good call, and that's really good information you just gave? Because, again, you can't replicate game speed. Joint practices, I don't care. That's not 100% game speed. It's just not. I've seen it in person. It's not 100% game speed. It's close. It's not 100% game speed. So if you don't play at all in the preseason and you go to make that first real cut, that first real move, David's right. You know how much more likely you are to pull a hammy or pull a quad when you haven't gone that speed before, or you've just tried to replicate it as much you can in practice or in a joint practice or a scrimmage. It's not the same as being out there on the field when that full adrenaline is coursing through your veins like it does on a Sunday at 1 o'clock. Griffin's up next. Griffin, what do you think? Agree or disagree?
I agree, man. I think that you got to play him. And I also think, like, you know, for a young quarterback, boost his confidence. Let him go out there and throw 50 touchdowns on a second-string defense and really just tighten up that confidence part of the game where you know you can go out there and do it. You know, because, again, I think if you let the second-string defense go against Penix for a couple of games, he's going to get that feeling of, I could throw a touchdown pass, I can move around, I can carve these defenses up. And I think that's really important, too, for a new quarterback to have that confidence going into week one.
Yeah, Griffin, it's a great call. Appreciate it. 404-726-0929. You know what I just saw on NFL Network, oh? You know who's starting this weekend? Baker Mayfield. Does he need preseason work? Coming off a career year, 40 touchdowns and, you know, 4,500 yards passing? No, he doesn't need it. But you know what it is? A good way to get ready for the season. It just is. 404-726-0929. Daniel's up next. Daniel, go ahead.
Yeah, man, I completely agree with you, man. It's we've been sold this lie past like five seasons in a row, I feel like. And it's never panned out the way that the coaches presented. Absolutely, like you're saying, and there's nothing that can replace live bullets, especially when you're talking about the quarterback position. There's so much to think about and to process on a game day. Like, I mean, if you look at a guy like Kirk last year, I think it would have done him a lot of good to gone out there and, you know, had a couple series, because you could tell our offense started slow. And, yeah, I'm just tired. I'm tired of that line of crap where, oh, you know, we had these team practices and that somehow simulates gameplay. I don't believe it.
No, that's a great call. I appreciate it. 404-726-0929. I agree, man. There's the cliche, there's levels to this. There are. There's levels. There's levels to a practice. There's levels to a joint practice. There's levels to a scrimmage. There's levels to team one-on-ones. There's levels to 11-on-11. There's levels to a preseason game. And there's levels to regular season action. Let's finish up on the phones with Chico. Chico, what do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with your previous callers. You know, I mean, there's a saying, scared money don't make money.
Yep.
You know, I mean, put them in there. You know, one of the number one complaints, for lack of a better word, was his accuracy. You know, how much better his accuracy would be if he were, you know, playing in preseason games, you know, and it's all about timing. And how you going to get that timing down if you're not playing, man? You know, put them in there.
No, Chico, you're again, I think everybody who's called, I'm surprised, or I don't think anybody disagreed. I think every single person that just called in unprompted just said put them in the game, which I get it. It's a relatively small sample size, but that's everybody who just called. Not one person said don't put them in. I know our buddy Garrett Chapman disagrees. There's a couple people that have weighed in. If you can't get through on the phones, hit me up on Twitter at C Thomas Radio. And that's where the question is, not playing Michael Penix Jr. in the preseason would be a mistake by the Falcons. Agree or disagree? There's been a lot more people that disagree on the poll than there is that called in, obviously, because that number is zero. 404-726-0929. Let's see, a couple more comments here before we get to break. Adam says he couldn't agree more. Haynes King for Heisman. I like that Twitter handle right there. He says agree 1,000,000%. But Todrick, Danimal Black, Mr. Yo, Garrett, they all voted to disagree. So it's not like there's nobody out there, but the overwhelming majority of the people that called in and the people that voted said, give him a little run. Like Baker Mayfield, Joe Burrow, Pat Mahomes, all these dudes playing in the preseason. And a lot of those teams are projected to be pretty good in 2025. And like a couple of our callers said, like, it's not like this model, Orin, if this model worked, I could see sticking to it. But it hasn't worked, and that's the problem. So I'm just not entirely sure, you know, I ask Orin all the time, what's the definition of insanity? It's repeating the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And maybe, you know, giving these guys just, again, we're not talking about playing a half. We're not talking about playing an entire game. We're talking about getting the rust off, facing live competition, getting the calls, dealing with timeouts, dealing with in-game situations that are just not the same if you're not in a real game. 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. Give me a call if you didn't get a chance to get in. We'll take more of your calls. We'll also hear from Joe Patrick. He joined us earlier in the show talking all things Falcons and Titans. We're handing it off to Corky Kell Classic coverage coming up in just a little bit on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.